Welcome back to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and today I'm joined at the mic by Cheryl Lindemann. Hey, Cheryl.
Hello.
And so, it's September.
Yep.
There's lots of things going on. We have lots of things going on.
Yes, very busy month.
Lots of stuff to read.
Yes.
And very little time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Hispanic Heritage Month, so we have a bunch of titles along with that, plus a little bit.
Yeah.
But otherwise, everything going okay?
Yes, just lots of reading. We have a lot of end-of-year lists that we're reading toward, and we're realizing there are only a few months left to try to make those difficult
selections. And I don't know
how
it got to this point.
I know.
Mean, it just seems to have gone very fast.
Yeah, and it was just, again, so much to read, so much to choose from, and just so hard to... So hard to pick. So we're in that really intense reading cycle of our jobs, I think,
more so than ever. Yeah.
The pressure's on.
I definitely agree.
My first title today is one that I was really looking forward to. I'm a big lover of magical realism in fiction. I'm not as much a fiction reader. I'm the nonfiction selector. But this is a work of nonfiction that reads like magical realism fiction because the story is so magical. And it is a true story of a woman's life. It's called The Man Who Could Move Clouds by Ingrid Rojas Contreras. And she's the author of the fiction novel The Fruit of the Drunken Tree, set in Colombia. And she and her family left Colombia in the 1990s amidst extreme violence, threat of kidnapping. It was time to go. They went to Venezuela and then went to California. But what this story is the story of... Ingrid Rojas Contreras' family, and in particular her grandpa Nono, and he was a curandero, and he worked in their community to eliminate spirits. He could move the clouds. He could heal. He was a healer. And after he died, people kept going to his grave. People kept asking for intercession still. And in this book, what they do is they go back to inter his bones and make this family journey, and it's filled with family history and that sort of thing, and then to scatter his ashes so that he can be free of this burden of being a curandero, which actually was a burden even in death. But in the story, he's a healer. His daughter, who's Ingrid's mother, is a healer, and Ingrid has a bike accident and has amnesia. And after amnesia, they come to her and they say, "This is how your mother got the powers of being curandera. Now you have them too." So it's really the author wrestling with this history that's gone through her grandfather, through her mother, to her. But it also is her going back and looking into her Colombian heritage, the heritage of colonialism, and looking at just her all these incredible, really truly incredible family stories. And there's one part in particular where she's trying to search her genealogy, and she's looking at some papers in a library, and they literally disintegrate, and she starts to just cry. And they have this moment with her mother, and her mother says, she goes, "I can't even, you know, you hit that point with colonialism in your history where you can't get those family stories." And that was particularly poignant and heartbreaking in the stories to find that. And her family, of course, it's a history of indigenous people in the past, but also the Spanish. And so the people that had more, the family that sort of took the side more of the Spanish were very mistrustful of the curandismo powers.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that sort of push and pull in the family, too. So just a really amazing story, The Man Who Could Move Clouds.
That's really interesting. Okay, and so that one's been on my list. It's still on my list, but my list is
huge.
So long. But jumping off from that, I'm going to go with my first title is The Daughter. I started to say The Daughter of Dr. Moreau by Celia Moreno Garcia. This caught my eye for a few reasons. One, it's Celia Moreno Garcia, and I loved her book Gods of Jade and Shadow, and then everyone loved her breakthrough horror title, Mexican Gothic. But it's also inspired by the classic The Island of Dr. Moreau by H.G. Wells. But this is sort of a refashioning of the tale from the point of view of the doctor's daughter, Carlotta, and his majordomo, Montgomery, who's an English-Scottish dude, sort of ends up working on the in the household. It takes that sort of mad scientist story, which Dr. Moreau was a vivisectionist who was trying to blend man and animal. But then it explores the plight of the other. I mean, because his creations are thinking, breathing things that have a point of view and are existing on this in this community. But also the colonialism at that time. Instead of an island in the Caribbean, Miranda Garcia sets it in the Yucatan Peninsula, which in its own way, because of the landscape, is sometimes depicted as an island. And it's also against the backdrop of the caste war that started in 1847 and lasted a good five decades in Mexico. And so you've got Mayan resistance, mixed blood people, Spanish and English, all involved. Throughout this, you've got Moreau, who has a patron who's really just wants the hybrids to further their colonialism. They need somebody to work their plantations now. You can't get Africans to do it anymore. It's that period of time. So, I mean, and the slave trade has already ended. So that it's just a further attempt to prolong that colonial power. But it's a really interesting story, interestingly told. You know, it's that blend of magic and horror and science, and you have very interesting voices both in Montgomery, who actually was in the original, there's a character named Montgomery who is in the original story, and then Carlotta, who is the daughter and has her own unique problems. You just go from there. It's just very well done. She's a fabulous writer. If you haven't read anything by her, pick something. There's almost any genre you can grab it from her. I mean, she's done kind of noir. She's done horror. She's done straight fantasy. It's her Mexican Gothic is a Gothic horror. It's just all very well written. And she just has a very interesting point of view and really looks at colonialism and I think everything.
Sounds really good. Wow. Well, my next title is going out of my collection area into teen books, actually. I don't read that many teen books, but this one really caught my eye, probably because it has a horse on it. Can't help it. I was really drawn to it. It is a beautiful book. It's called Rima's Rebellion by Margarita Engel, and Marisela has brought Margarita to our podcast before. I remember hearing some books that she's brought in the past. And Margarita Engel has written a huge number of books. She's won the Pura Belpre Award, the Walter Dean Myers Honor Award. She's a finalist for the YALSA Award for Excellence in Nonfiction. She's a Cuban-American woman who tells the stories of her people and of her own history in Cuba, which is what the story is about. It is starts in the 1920s in Cuba. It's a novel in verse, which I really love. It's beautifully written, lyrical, poetic. And it's about Rima, who is a kind of younger girl, but this is set over a number of years in the story, through her teen years. And she lives with her mama and her abuela in a small little, tiny little home, and they're lace makers. But she is the illegitimate child of a very wealthy man. And this is before the adultery law was abolished in Cuba. So she's really looked down upon. She does not have full rights. And her grandmother and mother and now herself, they're all part of a group of women called the Mambisas, who fought earlier in the Revolutionary Wars in Cuba. And they are feminists, and they're fighting for suffrage and for an end to the adultery law. And so this is a story about women's suffrage in a very difficult time. It's about dictators coming through, promising something better and not delivering on it. It's about the revolution, another revolution in Cuba, extreme violence. It is definitely a teen novel. There's great peril in the book for our main character. And it's also about the love for her horse, Ala, who's a buttermilk buckskin. And that's the one time she feels that freedom is just galloping on that horse's back. There's a lot of really wonderful and accurate horse detail in the book, which I loved. And it's also a love story in the middle of all this. So just a beautiful book. Rima's Rebellion by Margarita Engel also has a history of Cuban women's suffrage at the back. Very cool. A lot of really good information in here, too.
All right. I'm going to stick with Mexico and go out of my comfort zone. I think I've mentioned before, I did a bit of a deep dive into Westerns earlier in the year. And this one is finally coming out. I'd actually read it pre-pub. It's The Valley of Shadows by Rudy Ruiz. This is really interesting. It's a Western. There's no question it's a Western. But it's a blend of Western, magical realism, mystery, and a little bit of horror. Totally kept my attention. Surprised me in a number of places. But it deals head-on with the effects of the Mexican-American border changes in the 1860s and 70s, and then just the ever-present racism and injustice to both Mexican and indigenous populations, particularly along the border. It follows, it's in one sense, it's a murder mystery set in a Western. Some graphic murders have been happening in this border town, Alvido, and former Rurales Solitario Cisneros is called back to a town that he used to be the law of, but he was basically kicked out when white men came in and took over the towns when the border changed. But he has just a unique ability to track and hunt people down, and part of that is because he sees ghosts. So they help him along, and he does not want to get involved. He is totally just, he's had personal issues. He's lost his wife. He does not want to get attached to people. He is cursed. He feels cursed. People he gets close to get killed. He doesn't want to go back to this town where he lost his wife. But he goes. He does a preliminary look around. He tells them kind of what they need to be looking for, and he goes home. Unfortunately, his former all I can think of sidekick, but it was basically his lieutenant when he was in charge of the law in the town, is murdered with his family, and so he goes back and starts tracking down the killer. But it's much more, if the Westerns were told, and I say this in quotes because they're not, but it's Westerns were told from the point of view of the other, not always the American colonial obnoxious, for me, point of view that a Western is told from. This is, he's Mexican, has an indigenous background, his family, his friends are the, you know, it's the indigenous and Mexican American people who are, you know, that's where he grew up. That's what he is. He does have, you know, Spanish ancestors as well, and that's part of his problem and his curse. But it's just an interesting, different point of view in a Western, and we just don't have that many.
Yeah.
In that genre, I mean, it's almost against the basis of that genre, which is unfortunate. There's a few more people breaking through and actually featuring people of color and you know, Onvoce's stories set in the West, but it's still few and far between.
Yeah. Wow.
So, but Rudy Ruiz is somebody to watch. He grew up on the border, and all of his stories seem to be very much in that vein.
Wow. You made me actually want to read a Western. That is,
I'm not sure about this one, but
a little too violent for me.
That's the other thing. I mean, a lot of them still are, and the ones that I've read, and the ones that actually do feature people of color and indigenous, you know, indigenous characters, Mexican characters, Black Americans, it's just, they're still very, very violent. So it's one of those things where, it's still part of the genre very much. So.
Yeah. Well, my next book actually has a very loose tie to that, only in the sense of representation in a genre that is woefully...
Yep. I know where you're going.
...has very low representation. As a horse person, I read every horse book I could get my hands on, and this is a genre where there was very poor representation of anybody besides really white characters. Even a lot of boys with the Black Stallion books, and then finally more girl characters in the 80s and 90s and that sort of thing. But this this was just an absolutely, just a perfect Jay novel. I loved this book. It's called Can't Be Tamed by Shimele, is how you pronounce her first name, Syed Mendes. And this is a part of a series called Horse Country. There will be three books in this series. And it's the main character is about 11, so it'd be just a nice middle grade read. But it's absolutely fantastic. And the author has written, also won a Pura Belpre Award for the novel Furia. And she's an Argentinian American. She grew up in Argentina. And when she was a child, she walked past this extremely fancy equitation riding school. And she and her sister would peer through the bars and say, oh, we'd love to ride like that. And she didn't have an opportunity to ride until her daughter took riding lessons as an adult. She lives in Utah. And she then started to take her own lessons as a gift to herself, because as a child, her one access to horses was books. And again, books with no representation with people that looked like her at all. So her mission in writing these books is to provide that representation and to provide characters that kids can fall in love with, just like she fell in love with the Black Stallion books when she was a kid. So this is the story of Carolina Aguas Vivas, and she's grown up on Paradise Ranch. Her family are the caretakers of the ranch. They live in a cottage there. They are very happy there. They get to be intimately involved with the horses. She's been involved with them pretty much since birth. She gets to ride. She gets to care for them. And it's a family affair. Well, there's new owners that come to the ranch. And there's a daughter named Chelsea Sanchez, who's also Argentinian-American, but is very, has kind of a snooty attitude. And she gets to live in the mansion. And so these girls set off on a very bad note with each other. They have to clean the small barn together, which was Carolina's special job. So now she's very upset. Horses are her refuge, and she feels like she's losing that. So this is really a story about friendship and opening up and working together. There's so many fantastic life lessons for kids in this story. And it was really just a beautiful, read less like a series book than a really nice middle grade fiction book, I feel like. But it's shorter, so it's fun. And since they're printed in series, I think that they roll a little faster that way. But there's also a beautiful, feisty thoroughbred. There has to be a thoroughbred named Velvet. And she's owned by Chelsea, not Carolina. But they work together to try to figure out how to help this kind of traumatized, off-the-track thoroughbred. Mm-hmm. So just an absolutely wonderful book. Can't Be Tamed.
Okay. Very cool. Yep. Horses. So I'm going to take a hard turn. And so it's actually also Deaf Awareness Month. And I thought, as I was scrambling for another book that I wanted to talk about, there's so many that I want to talk about, but there's different reasons for a lot. Anyway, what I decided on was that I really wanted to put a spotlight on Deaf Awareness Month. And I'm reading currently Deaf Utopia, a memoir and a love letter to a way of life by Niall DeMarco. So Niall DeMarco, you may or may not know who Niall DeMarco is. He came to my attention because he was a contestant on Dancing with the Stars, and he is a beautiful dancer. He is also deaf. That's a really amazing, neat feat to be able to not only compete, but he won Dancing with the Stars that season. He's a really beautiful dancer. Other people may be American Next Top Model fans. That's actually where he first came to fame. He won his season of that. But he's half of a twin pair who grew up in Queens from a multi-generational deaf family. So this book talks about his early life in Queens, going through high school, getting to his degree in math from Gallaudet in D.C. Along the way, he fell in love with the idea of modeling and acting, and he's just sort of fought his way through and made a career of this. He is a major advocate for deaf culture. He's not recognizing it as a handicap, but a culture that needs to be respected and understood. And he is an activist. He's a producer. He's still a model, an actor. You know, he's just a very interesting family, very interesting view. And it's really, his goal is to just sort of get people to understand the culture. So it's a really interesting story. It's really, he's a very interesting presenter. And I just wanted people to know about it. So that's Deaf Utopia by Niall DeMarco.
That sounds great. It's a good preview to our titles for next month.
It is, actually. That's a good way of putting it. Thank you. So, yeah, that's what we have this month.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you.
All right. Nice talking to you.